listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to Nerd Assemble episode 246. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
This week we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff, because stuff's been happening since we were last here. I mean, E3 happened, but quite frankly, E3 was like, what? Like,
a bit lackluster.
There was pretty much fuck all going on, really. There was like some cool shit that happened in the sidelines, and that was about it.
There's like a teaser trailer or two.
I thought it was breathtaking.
Yeah, the little bit of like Breath of the Wild sequel announcement, at least on Nintendo's Direct, which wasn't even obviously a main presentation, was cool. But yes, so we're not gonna.
It felt like it was main. I mean, Nintendo Directs always feel like a main presentation.
Yeah. But it's still, you haven't got a hall filled with people there live watching
and
the thing.
I do think that the better Nintendo Directs for E3s were the ones that are infused with more humour, like the Muppets one and the Robot Chicken ones. And it's just like, bring those back.
Probably need Bowser to find his feet in his new job before that happens again. Still feels weird saying his name.
It's just too perfect. I think it's an example of the lazy writing that we've had in this universe, this timeline since 2016. It's just, come on, Doug Bowser.
Yeah,
it does make me wonder in that parallel world where, you know, Trump failed and Brexit failed, what it would be like.
Apparently, we'd have pizza and there'd be no fire. At least that's what I've learned from avoiding darkest timelines.
I like that reference.
But anyway, so a couple of things. We've got two short bits of news. So you might have remembered the couple of times or the whole episode that we kind of like dedicated to the upcoming UK porn block that was meant to be happening on July 15th.
Which was entirely all possible and everything.
Due to an administrative error, the requirement for the block has been delayed by at least 6 months because basically the government failed to file things properly with the EU in enacting this new law.
I think you mean clock blocked.
I still maintain that it's probably a political move to turn around and say, after we've supposedly left the EU, that, oh, look, huge success story, we've managed to do this already.
Well, no, because the thing is that in the last month or so, they launched this whole online harms white paper and trying to stop online harms from happening. And basically, it was kind of like, just a load of garbage. Had no real idea about how nasty shit gets on the internet or how people end up accessing it in the first place.
To be fair, I think some of the nastiest shit appears in kind of comment threads on stuff like, the Daily Mail and The Sun online.
Yeah.
Or on our television screens every weekday morning.
I think it's pretty much. I mean, first of all, Paul, you're giving them far too much credit. You actually think they planned any of this? You think they're competent enough for that?
Good point.
I think it's pretty much everyone. Hey, why don't we switch off the porn until 9 p.m. Why not? Why don't we have someone saying, "Are you sure?
Yeah.
You're old enough?" And then you say yes to the computer screen, and the computer screen then lets you see the boobies. And it just seems to me, you know, you've got people. All you have to imagine is your most clueless computer illiterate relative or friend, and that's who they've got running this department. Who's coming up with why don't we do the porn block? And then there's the poor sysadmin somewhere just going, we can't. It doesn't work like that. I mean, are you stupid?
I mean, part of the issue is that they're going to have all these age verification schemes bullshits, which all either involve the transference of a degree of information, personal information. Now, the most... you're probably not going to fuck yourself over too much, so to speak, method that
unless,
has been
unless
proposed,
you like that.
Unless you like that. Proposed is that you buy a pass from a local news agent because you might have to flash an ID in order to get that. Like, you know, like check over, challenge 25 type thing, like when you buy booze, cigarettes, aerosols, painkillers, etc. That involves no information of yours being stored really by anyone because it's just the pass and maybe an email address that ends up getting registered with the site. However, the other methods of verification, which involve you giving either credit card details, passport details, or driver license details to another party, is well open to abuse. Whether or not that database gets compromised is one thing, but I can imagine people setting up fake porn sites with fake capture fronts to you for you to then put in that information, and oh, look, how much identity fraud suddenly happened on your fucking identity. Holy fuck. Or, you know, somebody just robs your credit card.
I think, to be fair, I think this entire thing is kind of almost like a perfect metaphor for Brexit itself. You know, something that has been voted on by people who shouldn't be even fucking voting on it.
Because they
and deciding that it must happen, then going to people and going, implement this, and they go, we can't, we can't do this. But we've promised the people that we're going to do it.
But you just can't
do it.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing... is just it smacks of the people in charge not having a fucking clue about how any of this works. It's like, hey, I've got there are too many road deaths with cars. Why don't we make them travel at the speed of light but stop instantly, and they're covered in mattresses so everything's soft and no one gets hurt?
Yeah. Or interesting thing that came up this week, apparently, I think something like 48 OECD countries, we're the worst for cyberbullying amongst teenagers and kids and shit, apparently.
Gosh!
And
we win!
But the thing is, though, is that it's almost like cyberbullying, kids looking up porn when they shouldn't be, and when I say kids, more teenagers, but all that happens because they've got access to internet devices and sites, services and apps without any fucking parental supervision. I feel like there's a fucking thread here. There's a common thread here, and it has nothing to do with the availability of the stuff. It's the fact that nobody's keep an eye on the kids. It's like, oh, why? It's like, why? Where, you know, like, the kid's not in the house. I don't know where they've gone off to. Oh, well, as a parent, normally you should know where your kids run off to.
Oh, Emily.
If they're in your freaking living room, one would hope you might know what the hell they're doing in the goddamn, like, just, oh my god.
The number one thing is you can't criticise parents for being shit. They are. And there's a mammoth amount of them that will just feed their offspring utter shite because it's cheap and it shuts the kids up. And so, you know, so long as they're not in their hair, they can, you know, go on an arson spree. Whatever, they don't give a shit. But it's very important that you do not criticize them for it, because after all, they're parents.
I get that there are parents out there who don't give their young kids like tablets to like hold on to and watch, not YouTube Kids, just regular YouTube for dubious amounts of time and blah blah this and that. But it does seem these days, it does feel like the convenience of technology is suddenly overwhelming, and it's being used for the worst virtual nanny ever.
I mean, I feel like this is basically a thread that we're picking at to a much, much, much larger issue. In fact, I mean, all the issues are probably, you know, kind of meshed together like some sort of fabric.
I mean,
we're just picking one thread at.
But also, to be fair to parents, to a lot of them, they are overworked.
Yeah.
They don't have enough free time and energy to spend with their children to actually be like, no, don't do that. So they are looking for the easy options out. But then one could then say that this is all a symptom of the capitalist society that we live in today, where parents making money is incredibly important and perhaps more important than raising their children. But then the government and people like us still feel free to criticize the parental execution of their responsibilities, even though actually they're kind of in a shit position.
You see, I just zoned out there and I came back when you said parental execution, and I'm all for it.
But basically, I mean, it's easy for us to sort of say that, but I say that, but no, because my parents have made a point with my youngest brother of not letting him have easy access to stuff. Though, admittedly, that's with our help by putting various things in place, making it hard to access things.
I mean, it's also down to several other factors, include socialization of the child themselves.
Yeah.
It's like, frankly, I think I have far more issue with, say, you know, young teens or, you know, just verging on teens, preteens.
Yeah.
Falling into some of the shitty right-wing racist parts of the net. You know, stumbling over 4chan or particularly bad, subreddits.
Yeah, 2chan. Like
I've got far more issue with them finding access to those, and they won't be affected by crap like, you know, porn block, which is never going to work. We've discussed that before. It's just, it's a nonsense. It's the, you know, cars covered in mattresses. Why don't we, make that and then no one will die? It's fine. Yeah, it doesn't work like that. I mean, it can't work like that. And you've got far more issue with, you've got little kids, relatively little kids, believing the worst homophobic, racist, sexist bullshit. They see them titties.
Like the case of those two ladies on the London bus during Pride.
Yeah.
And being hassled and beaten up by fucking four kids.
Well, teenagers, but yeah. Still kids.
Yeah.
Two of them were young enough to actually be, you know.
So they were under 16.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the state of the UK porn block. It's a sticking plaster for what is actually a 10-inch wound that's been created through a lack of cohesion in our society on various fronts.
I mean, it's pretty much they are blaming entirely the wrong thing for any social ills, and they're trying to put a sticking plaster on someone's cut while they've got a gaping gunshot wound in their knee.
Well, I feel like that's looking at stuff in kind of a 2D respect, because, I mean, all of these issues thread together.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a case of, you know, online radicalization. It's also about, you know, class system. It's also about capitalism. It's all sorts of, you know, crap and, you know, social...
An easy target, and it's a typical thing that the Tories and, you know, sometimes in this country Labour will also gun for, where they go all Puritan. They clutch their pearls and they're, oh, something must be done to protect the children. So, yeah, but what about all this other crap that no, it must be the smut.
The snake oil salesman, in essence, basically going, okay, this will cure all your ills. You know, take this once a day or whatever, and it's like, it's far, far, far more complicated than that.
Meanwhile, once in theory the porn's gone, as it were, in 6 months, and they've managed to, if they even managed to successfully roll this out at all, what other content might they look at?
I just realised.
What
happens if the porn block does come in 6 months' time, and then all of a sudden there's an entire generation of kids that, you know, basically are born 9 months after that?
Actually, that's a good point, that could lead to unexpected population issues.
A population growth. Because, I mean, these things do happen.
And also just an uptick in people going onto the dark net, because you don't need to hand over personal information to do that.
I have to say that, of course, you know, the number one thing that will happen, and you know, it's been proven again and again, this is just a simple fact, that if you stop teenagers who are, you know, coursing with hormones to an insane degree from seeing any porn, then they will just not be horny anymore. It's just fact.
I'm going to move us on to another subject now, because we've got a whole episode from dedicated to this from earlier in the year.
Yes, if you want to hear more about horny teenagers.
How about not? How about not?
No.
Other short bit of news, the Raspberry Pi 4 dropped today, didn't it, Retroid?
It did indeed. I woke up this morning to... logged on this morning to people going, oh God, it's a Raspberry Pi 4! And it was a very lovely thing.
I did read over the specs, and I was kind of going, I have a 2B.
You have Raspberry Pi 2B?
Yeah.
I have a Raspberry Pi B, as in the one with the 26 pins.
Mm.
Before they expanded the header, you know, the reason for the you know, the B plus kind of thing. I have one of those, which was my first introduction to this, and let me just say, it was a little bit rubby to start off with, but it, you know, all credit to the Raspberry Pi Foundation, they did a bloody good job in catching up with that. I have some Raspberry Pi 2s, two Raspberry Pi 3s. I don't have a 3 plus, simply because I saw the upgrade and thought that's not really enough, you know, to justify it. I'll wait until there's a 4. And lo and behold, here's the 4.
To be fair, that's so, how people felt with the Wii U.
Mm.
Yeah. But to give a quick rundown, now it's 1.5 gigahertz. It's an upgraded quad core, which runs significantly faster. Some benchmarks I've seen range between double and four times the speed of the 3B plus. So it's quite nice. Mm. It comes with either 1, 2, or 4 gigabytes of DDR4 RAM. So the cheapest one is, you know, just like, you know, you can get a 3B plus for, you know, with 1 gigabyte of RAM for about £35. That's what the Pi 4 is now. That's what they launch it as. That's their, you know, commitment. They wait until the technology gets to a point where they can release it for about £35, including VAT, or, you know, about $35.
Yeah.
You know, elsewhere. So it's 30-odd quid for the 1 gig, it's 40-odd quid for the 2 gig, and it's 50-odd quid for the 4 gig. And I think, you know, for doubling the RAM each time, you know, £10 is okay. It keeps it in track with several of the other, you know, competitors for, you know, the various different types of Pi from, you know, other manufacturers. So that's good. Also, they have significantly sped up the SD card access, and now, you know, you've fiddled about with networking and such, haven't you, Emily?
A tiny bit, yeah.
Yeah. The complaint that you'll have heard is that the Ethernet and the USBs never ran at full speed. They were always slightly hobbled because they were running on, like, a hub which shared, you know, the bandwidth responsibility. Now, they don't anymore. The Ethernet socket has been upgraded from 100 megabit to 1 gigabit. It has two USB 2 sockets and two USB 3, which is a good competitor for, you know, SATA type speeds when it comes to in external devices. USB is very good for, you know, the pen drives that you can get. So, you know, you can use those very, you know, very well. It still has the composite video out, you know, so the, you know, stereo sound and video socket. So, you know, it has all that. It's got Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. It's now got a USB-C power supply connector. So it no longer uses the, you know, micro USB
Okay.
They've said that that's because they're trying to move to higher amperage power supplies.
Right.
And USB-C seems to be something which is taking off for that. I'm not personally convinced about that, but now I'll let them off. The biggest change to me is that it has two micro HDMI ports.
Two.
It supports dual display.
Ooh, okay.
Now, they've talked about, you can run multiple monitors on it so you can have a more desktop experience. They're saying with these benchmarks, with the speed of the Wi-Fi, the speed of the gigabit Ethernet, and the upgrade in CPU, it's more like using sort of a low-end PC for web browsing.
Yeah.
Which, to their credit, it sounds like it would be, because I've used the Pi 3 for web browsing, and it seemed quite capable. The micro HDMI ports, they are micro because they look more like kind of micro USB.
Yeah.
So there are two of those side by side, and of course one of my thoughts was VR. There's going to be people trying to pull shit like that with the Pi 4.
Mm.
Now it's not going to be doing Oculus type stuff.
No, quite.
But I reckon it's just a matter of time before someone fiddles about and gets Minecraft running so you can, run it, with two small HDMI screens, wired to your eyes.
To be fair, I do like the idea of owning a VR set, but the biggest issue for me has always been software support.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's all well and good, like, having the odd Skyrim or Rick and Morty or whatnot, but, unless there's, continual support for VR, in different games.
That has pretty much been my issue with it. I like the idea, but I don't like some of the, I've discussed it before, so I won't really go into it, but
yeah.
I don't like some of the shortcuts that, games seem to, have to make for it. And if they treated it as more as a sort of a camera option in the game.
Hmm.
I would like more VR stuff. I can, I can see the point for it. I can see, stereoscopic stuff with this. This is, it's going to be quite good. There will be people using, two Pi cameras or, something like that.
Hmm.
And, relaying it onto screen so you can get stereoscopic vision. So, there are all kinds of, I can't wait to see what some of the people do with this. Because the 3B Plus, one of my main interests in, things like the Pi are for emulation and recreating machines from the past, as in, the sort of software setup of them. So I can fiddle about with DOSBox, or I can fiddle about with an Atari ST or an Amiga with a hard drive, all that kind of thing. They're all good. We're going to be seeing how some of the emulators run on this in the next week or so, and I'm looking forward to it. Because there are some emulators which were a little bit, it's really pushing at the envelope of what the Pi 3, B Plus could do. So something that says it's up to four times, we'll see. Oh, also, the two micro HDMI ports are 4K capable.
Whoa.
That's impressive.
Yeah,
it's quite nice. So I am looking forward. I'm not ordering it immediately. I'm just waiting to see. What people say when they get Apple.
Might be asking for one for Christmas. I think that's what's going to end up happening.
Yep. Yeah. I'm holding myself back from it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, new shiny. But no. Wait. From that perspective, we're lucky we're in the UK, because every time there's been a new version of the Pi app, that's come out, and there's been a little bit of a shortage. I have seen on places like Hackaday, people be, getting a little bit angry about the shortages. Whereas we're in the country that, kicks them out.
Mm.
So chances are we're going to be able to get hold of them relatively easily.
Okay. All right. last bit of news that we're going to talk about is, I'm pretty sure, a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, we did talk a bit about how DC has handled Vertigo, because, of course, during the lifetime of this podcast is when the likes of Hellblazer became Constantine and then got dragged kicking and screaming more into the DC universe in the comics. Well, this past week, the inevitable has happened with Vertigo, which did become DC Vertigo, is now going to be, as Paul's put in my notes, Vertigone. Vertigo is being shuttered. Well, I'll read part of the press release, which Warren Ellis quoted, because he's written a bit about it. That's the writer, Warren Ellis. And basically, DC announced today that beginning in 2020, all of its publishing content will be organized and marketed under the DC brand, creating three age-specific labels, DC Kids, DC, and DC Black Label, that would absorb all of its existing imprints and focus DC's publishing content around characters and stories that evolve amateur along with the awareness and sensibilities of DC's readers. As a result of this new labeling strategy, DC will sunset the Vertigo publishing imprint at the end of the year. So, yeah. Now, apart from the fact that an imprint called DC Black sounds a bit like what?
It sounds a bit like it should be where you get like a, you know, homebrew ale.
Yeah, I mean, saying that, but I just feel like they haven't thought much about the connotations there. Like, why something that's more adult given that kind of label? There's like, because it's not, Black's not used in that kind of mature set, like, it's not a positive way to ring it. It's like it's you know, it's DC for adults almost, but not, because DC's still DC. So it's like, whereas you just had a name that just didn't sound like that, it'd be like just Vertigo. It's like, it's not regular Superman comics, it's something that's a bit different. And I think that's one thing that because obviously that, I mean, there was a press release, Warren Ellis was quoting that press release, but Warren Ellis goes on to talk about, it's like, well, Vertigo was always for stuff that was a little bit out there for the rest of the DC publishing stock, you know, and creator-owned stuff. So, like, people who published under Vertigo, at least until the last few years of its life, they maintained a lot of the rights over that content and the characters that they wrote for and created. The disadvantage with being under DC as a creator is that if somehow, lo and behold, you are allowed to make a new character, you pretty much own almost zero rights over that creation when you work for something like DC. Say, same case, I think, pretty much over at Marvel. That's why you've got publishers like Image can do what they do, because people maintain a lot of rights.
That was always the issue, wasn't it? Especially with Marvel stuff. I mean, there was the whole thing of Stan Lee leaving. Or was it Stan Lee, or am I thinking of Jack Kirby?
I don't think it was Lee. I think it was
I'm thinking Jack Kirby. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, pretty much leaving, and then just, I'm going to make my own comics label over here with Blackjack and, you know, Infinity Stones, but not, and et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, yeah, because wasn't he the one that created Darkseid in DC and then went over to Marvel and pretty much, like, copied it, but decided to be thanked?
From my knowledge, we could do with Cookie on this, couldn't we?
Cookie, come back!
He started off at Marvel, and then the Marvel management said, no, you know, we you do what we tell you to, and you don't own any of it. And he went, well, bollocks to you. Went over to DC and, you know, did all that, you know, and pretty much did exactly what he was doing at Marvel, and then got tempted back to Marvel, and it was... He pretty much just carried on doing exactly the same thing, except changing a few names and stuff. And so, okay, but yeah, the whole creator-owned thing is just a massive mess in American comics.
Yeah.
Massive mess. But
To be honest, I could very well see other people saying that comics in general is a bit of a mess.
I mean, part of the issue is just it's rights and people getting greedy because it's like, oh, what if it gets adapted in this? What if it gets adapted in that? What if it gets a, blah, 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 a million legal entities later? And maybe you stop thinking about how else you might make money out of this story and set of characters.
Can I just ask? I mean, because obviously in the in the movie world, comic books have had kind of several interpretations of the same story.
Yeah.
On screen.
Yeah.
Do they really do that when they reboot? Say for example, from was it Marvel to Marvel Now and stuff like
that? Yeah, there will be reinterpretations. Like, I mean, it was Marvel Now. I mean, Tony Stark suddenly had a whole new origin, which was written by Kieran Gillen.
But I mean, because I feel like there's a difference between like an origin and, say for example, the X-Men's Days of Future Past or something like that. Where it's like, you know, basically just kind of repackaged and changed a couple of things and redid the story.
Yeah. I mean, there's that level as well. And that is obviously what happens with the films. But the thing about it is that when you write or make art for the big publishers, you sign a contract, and that contract will stipulate how much, if any, ownership you will have. And the majority of cases, what you've created...
Mm.
You don't obviously have any ownership, even if it's like a particular story arc and that. If you're very lucky and have an agent and you're known, maybe you'll get some kind of royalties situation coming up with any storylines related to it, but it's unlikely. I mean, getting paid in a way that you can make a living from the big publishers is actually quite tough unless you're already quite high up the food chain.
Yeah, I was going to say it must be really, really tough for, people struggling to break into that industry, because not only do they have to work their ass off in order to get noticed enough for that, but also when they do actually get in, they get a raw deal to begin with until they become pretty much a household name.
Which is why I think with the uptick in stuff like crowdfunding platforms, we've got so many people just kind of just using crowdfunding, so stuff like Kickstarter, Indiegogo and whatnot, to like make a comic happen. Or you've got people, again, turning to existing publishers, but the ones that kind of let you keep your rights, like Image. There's a lot of Vertigo comics also, though, that I just can't see anyone launching within a DC line, because the problem with being part of the DC line is that you have to be part of the DC universe. Not everything would, it has to be some... tangential link, and it's like, well, Transmetropolitan, which Ellis was responsible for, doesn't really have any real DC links. I mean, Hellraiser does
now
a bit here and there. I mean, it's connected to Swamp Thing, which was DC. But you could pretty much read the whole of original Hellblazer stuff and like not know a single fucking thing about DC's wider universe.
It does not encroach in any way.
Yeah. It's just...
Just like that, there's no demons or summoning, reading of chicken bones in most superhero, in the Superman comics.
But also...
Batman doesn't go into that.
Fables... Would that have worked as originally as just a DC title?
Yeah.
Doubtful.
It's to me, it's just such a nonsense.
It's kind of like... I was going to say, it's kind of like they want to get rid of the labels because they're like branding. But also they don't like creators having any rights. And at the same time, they just want everything to tie into DC.
So no, we must build our brand. How about you don't? How about you just, let people do good shit, and then people like it. Then you, have a talk with them about adapting it?
I mean, I can't say anything to the profitability of Vertigo in the past 10 years, because the last 10 years is where we've seen it slowly being broken apart by DC. So it hasn't been run in a way which would maximise profitability.
They haven't known what the hell to do with it.
Yeah.
There's been some good stuff published, but... I mean, when I was, you know, massively into the comic scene, it was the Vertigo stuff and the indie stuff that I was reading.
Yeah.
And it was always a little bit weird that, you know, I was reading stuff that was, you know, technically, you know, DC, but because they were just publishing it. So, yeah. You know, things like Sandman and, you know, Hellblazer, you know, all of those.
Yeah.
You know, those were good, weird, interesting, well-written stuff. And yeah, it's just, what on earth? What on earth are they thinking, where they're rolling back on branding which has been successful for them in the past? Because if you're into comics and you know stuff like Sandman, you know DC Vertigo. You might not know it as DC Vertigo, you might just think Vertigo. But you know the kind of stuff that, you know, some of the books were, that were being published in its heyday.
Yeah.
So what on earth are you doing? It's like Prince. I'm just going to call myself Bob.
Prince changes.
You know, not quite as iconic as either Prince or Symbol.
The artist formerly known as Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just sounds brilliant, though. To be fair.
I think basically we think it's a mess. We don't think that the kind of stories that Vertigo was known for are really going to continue within any framework within DC. Would you say that's a safe assumption?
Hmm.
And people who are big names but want to do creator-owned. So, you know, like, I don't know, just anyone who's big named and wants to do creator-owned, like, they're not going to rely on a DC imprint to do that, ever.
I mean, I know that the three of us aren't the type of geeks to collect every single comic book or, you know, graphic novel out there for, you know, everything and whatnot, but it'll be interesting to find out from, you know, people that, you know, do like to, you know, kind of collect one of everything or whatnot, how they feel about the comic book industry and its fragmentation and this...
Or consolidation weird, in this instance.
And weird consolidation and whatnot. It's just...
I haven't seen anything to say what the fate of Vertigo stuff that's out digitally is. I would hope
that was going to be my next thought.
Yeah, I would hope it continued to be sold.
Now, there's Marvel Unlimited... I think, is it called Marvel Unlimited?
Yeah, and Marvel stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, if DC are trying to do that, maybe part of it is a rights thing or licensing. You know, they're wanting to try and do it a bit cheaper, so they want to make sure that they effectively automatically own things that they put out. Whereas I don't know. It's just such a massive, you know, you've got a good thing going. It could be better. So your approach is just to walk back on it.
Yeah. I think I'm going to move on to what we've been up to.
I was just kind of wondering whether this could actually be a move, because obviously Marvel have kind of done this whole thing where, you know, they've kind of got their own you know, film production company or, you know, whatever, and DC's kind of fragmented on whether it's, you know...
Nah, because the thing is, DC's been owned by Warner for a bloody long time, and any multimedia they've wanted to do has gone through Warner-related
companies.
Does that
include Vertigo?
Who did Constantine? Because that'd be, like, the main film that they've done that's a Vertigo originating...
I'm pretty sure that was Warner.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, so, like... Yeah.
Yeah, I was just
It's either going to be Warner or somebody like New Line.
I know that...
Or Village Roadshow.
I know that there's lots and lots and lots of money in TV and film, and, you know, that's obviously...
Well, I mean,
quite lucrative for both Marvel and DC, so I was just wondering whether that
DC's got their own online thing. That's where that show that... Retro Watch the few weeks ago that had Mark Sheppard in
Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol came from the adaptation of Swamp Thing that lasted one episode came from. So they are doing stuff and they are crawling back onto their own properties. The thing about Warner is that them and themselves, when it comes to their multimedia properties, they're a bit more sprawling. Though perhaps have a better handle on video games, because Warner Brothers Interactive's actually managed to stay reasonably together, hence how they've been able to do things like the Shadow Mordor and all that. And obviously the Batman, and help publish the Batman games, because while obviously Rocksteady made the majority of those, it was still being published under Warner. So...
Well, remember back when people didn't give a shit about Batman games?
Oh, God.
And that suddenly changed, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
who would have thought that if you make a good one, then people will like it?
Yeah.
to be honest, I mean, that's kind of, yeah. I mean, you can make a good game, but unless it sells well. But I think they've taken the kind of other spin on it, in which case it's like rolling the dice. But it's really not, because if you make a good game... and you leave it long enough, then it will kind of gain success, especially if you do a second one, so that you're creating a series by the same developer, expanding on the same ideas, and just bigger and, you know, better. And, yeah, you will generally tend to rake in the money.
Okay, I'm going to move us on to what everyone's been up to. Retroid?
Well, let's see. There's been the new series of Jessica Jones. Jennifer.
Is that what season of that is then? Is that third? Then? Is that third?
Third. Yeah, because
and that's the final one.
Yes.
That's the final season of the Netflix
Jessica Jones.
No, of the Netflix season series.
Okay.
From Marvel.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they've just been the Shower of Bastards.
Yeah.
As in yeah, Disney have. So. It's like, no, Netflix, no, you can't have the thing which is doing well for us. You can't make us money. No. It's not making us enough. We'll do our own with Blackjack and et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, been enjoying the season. It seems to be a bit of an upgrade to the second season. I thought the first season of Jessica Jones was fantastic. David Tennant as... you know, the bad guy, and now just, you know, he played it to perfection. The second season, it was, I still liked it, but it, you know, it seemed like it was, you know, down in comparison. And then, you know, this one is, yeah, it's quite good. Not finished watching it yet, because we pretty much been book setting, thanks to Netflix suddenly making a new series of it. I saw the first two seasons when they were first broadcast on Channel 4, but my wife hasn't. So we've been watching, thanks to All 4, you see, you make something legally available, and we can watch it on that. you don't have to employ Dave Internet to source things for you. What an incredible idea, isn't it?
Yep.
But yeah, we have been watching Tales of the City.
Sorry, Emily just wrote down Black Mirror from that.
But yeah, the based on a series of books by Armistead Maupin, set in 1970s San Francisco. And it was one of the first successful LGBT book series. About a house on Barbary Lane, ran by a woman called Anna Madrigal, and she will, you know, rent out flats to, you know, various people. I'm not going to say much more of it than that, but have either of you two seen any of Tales of the City?
No.
Afraid not.
You go and watch it now. I'll wait. But it's good. It's a little bit aged. Let's see. I think the original books were written in the 70s, so set in the 70s. The first series was made by Channel 4, by an American production company, but it was funded by them, in 1993.
Oh, gosh, okay.
So, yeah, how old were you?
I would not have been old enough to watch it.
I definitely not. Whereas I was, I will have been about 18 when it was on TV. So, yeah. So, you know, I watched it at the time because it was one of those, you know, it's slightly forbidden. It's a little bit fruity. Type, you know, type of thing that Channel 4 was supposed to be making all the time, but of course they never did. But, you know, what, I think it's one of the series that gave them their rep. And it, this was made before Queer as Folk. So this was kind of, you know, laying the, you know, the foundations for, you can make a drama series where the focus is on LGBTQ and it can work and it can be successful. So it's 1993 for the first miniseries. Then I think it was 96, 97 for the second series, which Channel 4 co-produced. And I don't know why, but about half the actors changed. In the first series, you've got a straight character called Brian, who's played by Paul Gross, who was the Mountie in Northern Exposure.
Okay.
No, 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 Due South.
Due South. Yeah. That makes
Due
sense.
Due South. I'm thinking that, yeah, yeah. Because I'm thinking,
If it's 96, 97 that the second miniseries came out, he would have been busy with Due South, wouldn't he?
Not quite possible, yeah. But then there are various other people who, you know, who's that? Oh, that's supposed to, that's like, you know, Mouse. Who's the main character's, you know, gay best friend. And, yeah, basically it follows this woman who, you know, moves from sort of middle America and, you know, she moves into one of the flats and she's suddenly sort of thrust into 1970s gay scene. So, it's that kind of thing. It's half of it is dealing with that and the other half is it's got some very weird plots for additional stuff. Like, it's got the Jonestown Massacre in the second series.
Okay.
You know, the Drunk the Kool-Aid.
Yep.
Yep. Cult in, yeah. So it's got that as a, as part of a follow-up in the, you know, the, later series, and a cannibal plot. Oh, that was it. The Jonestown Massacre follow-on was, you know, in season 3, the cannibal plot with a bloke who has an amnesia is in the second series. So it's got the, you know, these things were, you know, a little bit weird where you could kind of tell that Armistead Maupin was just writing it for himself and just, you know, doing whatever the hell he fancied because he probably didn't have an editor telling him what to do or what not to do.
He wouldn't be the first.
Yeah, yeah, and that's not a bad thing because you do get something which is unique. But yeah, so Channel 4 made the first series, co-made the second series. There was the third series in 2003, which was entirely made by Showtime in the US. Channel 4 do not have the rights for that, and it is not on all four. So Dave Internet had to sail interview for, you know, to help us watch that. But then you've got a big leap in time. I mean, unfortunately for us all, 2003 and 2019 are further apart than probably any of us would like.
Yeah.
So when it comes to Tales of the City on Netflix, which it does not have a previously on, and they do not have the previous series.
Right.
So it's... What I did was, you know, I said to, you know, my wife, hey, you know, should we watch this? I've watched, you know, at least one of the earlier series. It's quite good. And yeah, okay. And then, of course, it all starts up and you've got these characters coming back together, you know, after about 23 years, it's, yeah, you know, listed because, of course, they were set earlier on than, you know, when they were shown on TV still. And you've got lots of follow-up on stuff, and it's like, oh, yes, about that thing that happened. And you go, I have no memory of this. What the fuck's going on? Who's that? Hey, What are they talking? Okay, so that's why we ended up watching it. You know, the earlier seasons. So yeah, we're quite enjoying that, and of course, with it being Pride Month, it's only fitting. Yeah. So that is a good series, and if you're going to watch the earlier ones, I would recommend them, even if they are a little wobbly in some respects. Let's see, other things I've been doing. I've been fiddling about with TV, and Philips Discover TV.
Philips, is it Discover or Discovery?
I initially thought it was Discovery, not helped by other people calling it Philips Discovery, but it turns out it's like, no, now I actually own one. I can look at it, and the name on the front and on the back is Discoverer. So Philips Discoverer, space TV, helmet, thing. So I've been fiddling with that. I've got progress in some areas, stalled in others. So I'm trying to make a little kit oscilloscope to help me with this, because I've got a feeling that it's all to do with levels. I managed to make a little transistor booster, which got some things working on the TV, as is, which didn't before. So that's the first time I fiddled with a transistor, so that's a good thing. So hooray, that worked. But again, I want to know the levels of things, because I think that's where the problem is. I think part of my problem is I've been looking at the data sheets for chips and not enough at the circuit in the TV itself and how that's shunting everything around in the circuitry. So yeah, I'm going to kind of, step back and check things with this little kit oscilloscope that I've had for a while. Let's see, other things. Have we mentioned Good Omens?
Not so far, but we can all talk about Good Omens because everyone here has now watched it.
Yes, exactly. And I think that would be a very good idea. I'll just say that we loved it.
We also loved it.
My wife has read the book. I, for some reason, didn't get around to it. Probably because I have read bugger all Terry Pratchett. Not because of an aversion, but due to a simple, where the hell do you start?
Yeah. I've read Good Omens, I think, probably when I was in college, I think, sometime around then, and really enjoyed it. And from what I remembered, the show definitely was a very faithful adaptation, if not always in detail, certainly in spirit.
Yeah. Helped, of course, by Neil Gaiman working very closely on it.
Yeah.
And him being the co-author of the original book. Did you hear that Neil Gaiman had said that it was never in the top seller list in the US?
I'm not surprised, considering subject matter.
Yeah, fair. But apparently it is now.
can we just mention the fact that what was it that
that lovely petition.
Take it down, Netflix.
Naughty Netflix making a series like that.
Somehow
in an alternate universe.
Meanwhile, somehow the BBC managed to keep their name out of it, even though BBC were partly involved in it being a thing. So it's like,
They are in the end credits.
Yeah, but obviously these guys didn't watch it until, then, before they decided to launch their incorrect petition. Their incorrect petition.
They're as well observed and as knowledgeable as I would expect from evangelicals who want to take down the series because it's making Satanism acceptable.
I don't think that was quite the message the show was kind of going for. But okay.
I think it just because it wasn't all the demons and Satan and Lucifer and all the many other names of, that particular thing. Just because they're not smote, then they must surely be promoting it.
I mean, it was all Book of Revelations. I thought they would have liked that shit.
Well, I mean, considering that they're the country that produced stuff like Supernatural.
Oh, yeah, but Supernatural's in that weird-ass position of being liked almost equally by both Democrats and Republicans. Mm. So, fuck knows what's going on with that. It's like, I'm assuming the Republicans ignore the religious stuff because of all the guns. and the muscle cars.
There's a hell of a lot
and
of
the red meat.
Stuff in there, though.
I know, but you could just keep ignoring it. And also, they don't go on the Christian stuff that often. Like, quite often, it's just some weirdo thing, and witches tend to die. So,
you know what it probably is? Because the Winchester brothers are obviously kicking ass all the time, including demon ass, which they're fine with violence. So it's
and the ownership of guns.
Yeah, it's just
they're just running around Middle America, taking ass and kicking names.
Yeah,
it's just
it sounded cool with it being that way around.
It's just when you have like angels and demons and they're kind of not beating each other to a bloody pulp.
Well, we've talked before, about the amazing trend of fandoms just completely ignoring massively overt messages.
Yep,
that's true. I mean,
in series. Yeah, so and, yeah. The Winchester brothers could be standing there in the middle of a field, say, "God is dead, never existed in the first place," and then he kind of exists, and then we killed him. These lot would be going, "Well, we don't know what that was about."
They just had a shouting.
They used a gun and drank a beer.
I'm going to crawl this away from Supernatural, which feels weird to be doing. But like, can we just get back to Good Omens, please?
That's natural.
I mean, Aziraphale and Cowley have been... There's a lot of shipping going on. To be fair, the show did not help itself in any attitudes around shipping that might have developed out of our favourite angel and demon character from that adaptation.
Didn't that spawn some sort of rant from Shatner about shipping?
Yes, I believe it did, because Shatner doesn't understand anything anymore.
Which is only
Shatner's an asshole.
Which is only one of two of the recent things that Shatner has gotten iffy about. Recently, because there was that thing about the insignia on Mars that was found, and Mark Hamill got in. You know, he tried to basically go
try and get
Mark
start
Hamill
a fight. And it's just like
Twitter fight,
and Mark Hamill's like, "What?" Anyway, so other than Good Omens, Discoverer, and Tales of the City, are we saying that's the highlights, Retroid?
I think. I just finished the main campaign of Assassin's Creed Origins. I'll just continue to call it that because it's what the Eurogamer crew started calling it, just to see if people would catch it.
Okay. Did they?
And it's about. I'm not finished it entirely yet because there are a lot of things to discover, tombs to raid, and side missions to do, but I've sank about 50 hours into it. So I think I've got my money's worth.
Mm.
So yeah, Assassin's Creed Origins is a very good game. And it kind of makes me want to go, ooh, Odyssey. But I seeing as the Notre Dame Cathedral, the roof burnt down, and Ubisoft decided to, as a sort of, a nod of respect to that, giveaway. I can't remember the name of it now. Whatever the hell the French Revolution Assassin's Creed is called.
I haven't kept up with the chronology of the Assassin's Creed games and names.
I want to say Liberation, but I don't think it is.
Anyway, that one.
Yeah, the one that they laser scanned Notre Dame.
Assassin's Creed Banana.
Yeah, that one. Assassin's Creed the Frenchie. Assassin's Creed Viva la Guillotine. but yeah, they gave away that one, so I've got that one to play next. So thank you.
Yeah. Paul, what you been up to?
Mostly watching you play Far Cry, to be honest.
There were some other things. We went to the cinema twice since we last recorded an episode.
Did we?
Yeah.
It's a big building with the film on the wall.
He's looking blankly at the floor right now.
I know there's X-Men Dark Phoenix.
And...
Oh, did you two saw that, did you?
Yeah. Well, we kind of felt obliged. You know, it's,
was there anything else you felt about it?
That it was a bit better than The Last Stand. However, that I haven't enjoyed one of these X-Men movies since First Class. But that might be just me. So other people liked things like...
Days of Future Past and Apocalypse.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like this film was... I think one of its strengths was the way that the mutants fought. It kind of felt more like they were using their gifts rather than being like, you know, punching each other, which obviously isn't their gifts.
Also, there was a slight more nuance in which characters were siding with what than we usually got, which was cool.
Once again, Xavier was kind of like, you know, dicey grounds.
Yeah. I think due to the fact that this film was produced whilst the Fox takeover was happening by Disney, it got crippled a bit in terms of what it could do, because technically it was, I mean, it's doing stuff to Phoenix Saga, which is, if I'm remembering correctly, Phoenix Forces, the Phoenix is like to do with the Bloomin' Eternals and all that, which is technically what Ego was over in Guardians. Or am I misremembering?
No, I think...
I could be misremembering at this point, but I feel like there's elements of Phoenix which cross over with shit that's been happening with MCU, but you're not going to get that crossover there because of the fact that the film was being produced during the wrong time for legal shit to be okay.
I don't think it's Eternals, because the Eternals are a Marvel thing that's kind of coming, like their own film. But I think that there is another name for them that I can't remember.
But it's the Phoenix is the same force as fucking Ego, from what I remember.
Ego and Galactus.
And all that lot. Yeah.
But I can't remember what they're called off the top of my head.
You could...
I could go on my phone.
And quickly put me out of my misery on that front. But okay, so we weren't exactly hugely impressed with film. It was like, meh. Basically, I mean, to me, all of them have been meh since First Class. First Class really benefited from that short production schedule that they had, because they had only a few short months to write the damn thing, and then they had a very, for shooting something like that, a very short period to shoot it, because availabilities were going everywhere, and there was issues with trying to get it done in time to make sure that Fox maintained the rights. Well, Paul's just done a quick Google, and I'm completely off my rocker and completely wrong, which is fine. Ego's a celestial, but the Phoenix Force is its own weird fucking thing that has at some point had a fight with a celestial, but yeah.
So it's just like a Space MacGuffin.
Yeah, but basically that wasn't covered, though, in The Last Stand. So the whole Phoenix thing in The Last Stand was completely ignored, that area of lore, whereas Dark Phoenix does acknowledge it. In the sense that it's an entity from somewhere else that inhabits Jean Grey. But we also saw last week Men in Black International at the cinema.
I heard just reviews saying that is like, wasn't that good. Actually, it was fucking good.
It was quite fun. We laughed a few times. We enjoyed it. I do think it may have broken some of the lore from the original first film, but I might be wrong. It was weird. We did watch 2.5 of the original films prior to seeing this, because they decided to do a marathon of it on Film 4 on Father's Day, and we were over at my dad's, and it kind of just ended up with Men in Black on, because everyone reasonably likes Men in Black films. So it was like an inoffensive thing to have on in the background.
I mean, it's definitely a very different dynamic.
Yeah, but it benefited from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And even though you had pretty much like Thor and Valkyrie, and they were partners, it didn't kind of try and be like, you know, oh yes, they're each other's love interest.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that they're just partners.
So, yeah, so that was pretty nice. Pretty cool.
That's progressive.
It was progressive. It was funny. Some bits were predictable, some not. We had new characters introduced. That was cool. And as we said, different dynamics. People who were like saying, oh, but it's not Tommy Lee Jones, Will Smith, blah, blah, blah. I'm kind of, I think I've gone past this idea of the same people playing the same things all the same fucking time. Mm. I mean, admittedly, it's big of me saying that coming from a fandom like Supernatural where we've had the same people playing the same things for like going to be 15 season. But at the same time, I'm happy for them to move on.
Yeah. And it's not just that, but also in Supernatural, at least they've established that there are hunters around the globe. Yeah. It's not like, oh no, the Men in Black are, you know, this American force that, you know, protects the world against aliens all by their lonesome. And, you know, somehow aliens are, you know, kind of strictly controlled in, like, you know, one part of the United States.
I mean, I can't say for certain how much or how closely any of the films, any of the four films follow the original six Men in Black comics from the start of the 1990s published by Malibu, who were later bought by Marvel. Now, that's an interesting one because somewhere down the line, Marvel technically owns Men in Black to an extent.
Yeah.
But obviously it's Sony making the films and has been Sony and Amblin and a couple of the little production companies specifically for it making the films over the years. So it's going to get interesting at some point. Anyway, the film was enjoyable. Don't believe the negative reviews, especially if these come from people who have issues with female leads.
Yeah. Nowadays, it's getting incredibly difficult to actually believe, you know, online reviews because...
If there's a female lead.
Yeah, because like, they're like, you know, these could be, you know, very much the same kind of people that have decided to cut all the women out of, like, Endgame or out of, like, Star Wars or shit
got,
like that.
All got really angsty over Ghostbusters. So, yeah. So we did that. So what else? Is that the only things that you've kind of... Is everything else what I've been up to?
Pretty much.
Okay. Let's deal with the easier thing first. I decided to start watching The OC the other day, which is a after school special from the earlier part of the noughties. Yeah, basically, I got a hankering for it after listening to a Spotify playlist on California Rock because the freaking theme song from The OC came up on that. And I was like, oh, I never finished watching The OC back in the day. Oh, how can I legally watch this? So the DVD box set was $39.99 via Amazon. The digital version on Google Play was $14.99 a season. Yeah, for four seasons where the fourth one is short, also kind of painful. It's not on Netflix in the UK. And then finally, I went on Amazon Prime, and the digital versions are $5.99 a season. So guess where I've gone. So I've only bought the first season for now. But yeah, sort of rewatching it and that, and just being like, oh my God, Ryan, I don't remember Ryan being this fucking pathetic during the start of the season, but he really was. He's like our main protagonist that we're meant to be identifying with, the guy who's kind of like a fish out of water, who's not used to this Newport social scene and rich lifestyle at all.
Turns out that he's actually Commissioner Gordon.
Yes, it turns out at the end he's Commissioner Gordon, and he's going to bring Gotham to its knees.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's the same actor.
Right.
From Gotham TV younger. Series. Yeah, just much, much younger, much more puppy-faced. So started rewatching that. Been catching up with The Rookie, which we are pleased to find out has been renewed for a second season. Sky have been showing it on Sky Witness. I think we've got episode 15 to watch and episode 16 is up this week, and it's just been really good. There's representation in it that I wasn't expecting in a really positive way, queer representation. So I was like, yes, this is nice. And freaking I've forgotten the actor's name now, like our main guy.
Nathan Fillion's
adorable in it. So it's been really nice to watch. And then I think probably the main big thing that I've been dealing with is I completed a playthrough of Far Cry 5.
Whoa!
You say that, but if anyone's seen any of my tweets or talked to me recently, I have issues with what are considered the good and bad endings of Far Cry 5. Far Cry 5 does much like Far Cry 4 in the sense that if you don't do anything near the beginning of the game, you get a different ending. In the sense that you've completed the game, you've got an ending, it's done. Right?
Right.
But then if you play over 30 hours of the actual game, pretty much, it does have as a choice between two other endings. And what are considered the good and the bad endings from that is massively up for debate, and how you feel about tram problems from Season 2 of The Good Place.
Indeed.
Lives of the few the lives of the many outweigh the lives of the few kind of situation is pretty much the conclusion of Far Cry 5, and it's like the one where the few matter more is considered the bad ending. Like, if the few die, that's bad, apparently. But if millions die, that's good.
And this would be the ending that the standalone add-on follows on for. Yeah.
Yeah. New Dawn.
The post-apocalyptic one.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like, that's fucked up, in my opinion, that Ubi and the community have decided that that's the way it is, just because he gets a fucking sequel. It's like, no. That's not okay.
You know, Spock would like a word.
Spock would like a word. Most of the characters from The Good Place would also like a word. And some tram drivers as well.
Yeah.
It's just like that's. And also, because I, after being so pissed off by that ending, basically, I went back to playing Far Cry 4, which I have never actually completed. I've never gotten ridiculously far into it, and this time around, because I've obviously recently played a game and the mechanics don't change that much between the games, like I'm playing it quite smoothly and stuff and getting on with it quite easily. I'm enjoying it way more. And you know what? The antagonist of that, way more interesting and enjoyable, and also somebody that you kind of like, he's kind of, yeah, I can see where he's coming from, but also you've done some bad shit, mate. You're going to go down. It's happening.
Yeah.
And also, there's none of this bullshit. Oh, God, Far Cry 5 got so ridiculous. Every area you dealt with, you'd have these moments where you basically got fucking kidnapped.
Hey.
And had to deal with bullshit to do with that area's boss. And, and this happened, so many times per area. And you just basically lose all agency for about 20 minutes of gameplay. And it's just like, for fuck's sake.
I mean, considering you're slowly becoming, a more effective killer and, just that much of a badass, and then you get taken down in cutscenes and being like, ooh, we're going to intimidate you a little bit and then set you free.
What? Or brainwash you a bit and set you free, depending on which area you're in. It's just like, for fuck's sake.
No, I'm the badass that is kicking your ass.
Oh, going back to good v bad endings, how the hell can you say the good ending is the one where the dog, the cougar, and the fucking bear dies?
Now, that's automatically a bad ending right there.
Exactly. The one where your additional help that you can gather who aren't human, so Boomer, Peaches, and Cheeseburger, where they die is apparently the good ending. I disagree wholeheartedly with that notion. Wholeheartedly. They were far more reliable than the human characters you tried to save. Far more reliable.
Speaking of human characters, I played several of the Far Cry games, but the one that sticks in my mind when it comes to characters is Far Cry 3, where I was genuinely trying to work out whether they wanted you to hate everyone that you went to that island with.
I certainly did end up hating them by the end.
Yeah, it's just I hated them pretty much from the first cutscene with them. You get, well, you're a Shara Belens.
Yeah.
Oh no, we've been separated from you. Good. I'm just going to leave now. sod you, lie, you're awful. But I was throughout that game, I was trying to work out whether that was on purpose or whether it was just entirely accidental on their part.
Mm. I can't tell now that I think about it. It's been a while since I played it, and I haven't booted up my Xbox 360 in like a million fucking years, so like I'm not going to find out anytime soon.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I think the version of Far Cry 5 that you got actually is the Game of the Year edition, which does have a revamped third game on it.
Does it?
I've not seen
anything regarding that on the box. The box is over there.
Oh, okay.
Paul's being the verifier of stuff again. Yeah,
the verifier of facts. He is the Snope.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I liked Far Cry 3, but, yeah, the characters I genuinely couldn't give a flying shit about whether they survived or not. I liked everything else about it. It was nice.
I didn't see that. I don't know how to access that from all the codes that I put in, but okay.
Oh, there you go. PS4 version, I presume?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but three.
Yeah, Far Cry 3 was on PC. I picked up a cheapy copy of Far Cry 4 on 360, but I don't have a 360 that's hooked up at the moment.
Far Cry 4 on 360? Did it come out on 360? Because I got it on PS4.
It did.
I think it came out on both.
Okay.
It was around about that time where everything seemed to be coming out in a, we've slightly hobbled both versions. So just so it will fit on both.
Yeah.
It's like I was genuinely confused how Alien Isolation was coming out on PS3 and 360.
Anyway, so I completed Far Cry 5 and was so disappointed that I went back to playing Far Cry 4. It's pretty much what went down there.
Have you played Far Cry Primal?
No.
That's one I really fancy the idea of, just because it's just such an out there concept.
Mm.
For anyone who's not familiar, the idea of Far Cry Primal is that you are a primitive modern human. Isn't it something like Ice Age?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so there's mammoths and saber-toothed tigers and things like that, and you've got to fight and form alliances with other human tribes. And they all speak in a sort of, made-up...
Mm.
Caveman thing. So yeah. I find that interesting, but I've yet to see a cheapy copy.
Yeah. I think I will be completing Far Cry 4, but Paul persuaded me to pick up cheap New Dawn. So we'll see how that goes when I finally get to it. Mm-hmm. I think that's everything I've been up to that I can think of. So yeah. Oh, I've been reading a bit of this lovely book called Moneyland. I can't remember the name of the author at the moment, but it's a Brit who wrote it. But it's basically about how, how money and rich people and how their money oftentimes seems to just not be anywhere where the government can tax it.
Mm.
In regards to what country the rich person's from, that seems to be what happens for some that are extremely rich. It's kind of explaining how globally that's able to happen.
Right.
And it's pretty fucking terrifying. And it also explains why certain individuals from certain political parties and their backers and whatnot are very keen for us to leave a certain union that's trying to bring in various financial regulations.
Indeed.
So, yeah.
Is it because of freedom? That's why they're doing it, isn't it?
That's
why I keep reading.
Not because there might be more scrutiny over their affairs. So it's a very interesting bit. I think it came out last year.
Yeah.
But I think the paperback version came out this year, but I'm reading it on Kindle. But yeah, so that's cool. Anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. I apologize for getting the Phoenix Force and Celestials mixed up. I mean, come on, if for a casual fan to remember anything of the Marvel Universe is a fucking miracle at this point. It's so fragmented. across film and comics.
It's, like, it's just all over the bloody place.
Yeah. So, that's all we've got time for. So it is goodnight from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk. You can also find the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at @NerdsPodcast. We're also on Facebook. You can listen to episodes via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, freaking Stitcher, and a bunch of other things, I suspect, at this point. And that's all we've got time for. So, good night.
Good night.
Good night.